Michael Kaplan. Please welcome him. Thank you.
Hey, good evening. Thank you for staying. Second half storytellers, we need a little extra. This is a story about seventh grade. In seventh grade, I attended two wildly different schools, and neither was the school that I should have gone to. I should have gone to Paul Revere Junior High School down in West Los Angeles. But my older sister had gone there a couple of years before me, and she'd had a terrible experience. She just hated it. And my parents did not yet understand that my older sister hated all schools as a rule. So they jumped to the conclusion that the junior high must be broken and that they would spare me that experience. Now, in the early 70s, private school was really only an option for the very wealthy and the very religious, and we weren't either. But in 1971, there were two brand new, independent, experimental private schools that were starting up. And I applied to both, and I interviewed at both, and I was accepted at both. One of them exists to this day and has a national reputation for academic excellence, and the other crashed and burned in 4 months. Guess which one we chose. Pacific Hills was the brainchild of Penrod Moss, who was this imposing, charismatic, blind educator who was all about the idea that, you know, the school was an ecosystem and required a reciprocal relationship between the students and the teachers. And my mother just loved this because she still had a progressive heartbeat going. She had been in her 20s, she lived in Greenwich Village, and she had taught at the Little Red Schoolhouse, which was really a landmark progressive school at the time. She thought this was a wonderful idea. I realize now that this choice sat on the fault line of my parents' marriage because my father was a traditionalist and he really was very skeptical and grumbly and kind of quietly snarky about this choice. But he was willing to sit back and see how it played out. So Pacific Hills occupied a string of offices that had been vacated and were connected by a little outdoor courtyard. And on the first day of school, about 40 of us arrived for an experience that was sort of part Esalen and part fledgling socialist state and part Lord of the Flies. Now, we did have, you know, a math teacher and a social studies teacher and an English teacher, but basic rules and decorum were just thrown out the window. And a lot of times there would just be the spontaneous decisions, usually driven by the students, that, okay, we're just gonna leave the classroom and go walk 3 blocks and go to the community park and hang out there for the day. One time, I don't even know how this happened, but a student brought his father's projector and we watched a Marx Brothers movie in social studies. Now, I wasn't that interested in the whole ecosystem and reciprocity idea. I just wanted to figure out how I fit in. You know, I was 11 years old. They had skipped me a year early on. I was young, but I was large. And I just couldn't quite figure out my niche until I arrived at, I was the provocateur. And I would argue with the teachers and a lot of times just decide I wasn't even gonna go into the classroom, that I would hang out in the courtyard. And I wasn't doing this on any lofty principle. I was doing it because I knew that two or three other kids would join me. And I would find my people that way. And over time, more and more kids would kind of skip the classroom and hang out in the courtyard with me. I remember one day when we just made a series of little bonfires with popsicle sticks, you know, not because this was aligned with science class, but it was just a way to pass the time. And at one point, Penrod Moss came out of his office, white cane in hand, and thundered toward us and said, "What class are you supposed to be in?" And we all silently tiptoed to the other side of the courtyard and left him to angrily lecture the wall, which is really one of the nastiest things I ever did as a kid, but it was kind of an operating metaphor for what was going on with the school. And more students were joining me just hanging out in the center courtyard until a day when it became a full-on conflict, and now we declared that we were on strike. Not that I know what we were striking against, but we just sat there going, "Strike! Strike! Students on strike!" And it felt very empowering, and I can remember getting out of the carpool at home, and the kids in the car and I were going, "Strike! Strike! Students on strike!" And I walked into the house, and my mother had been watching from the window, and I could see, you know, even though she could tell the difference between coal miners and snotty seventh graders, that she was still a little pleased about this because her, you know, her little progressive pulse was quickening just a bit. But that night, Penrod Moss called my father, and you know, there was clearly going to be hell to pay. But before they could decide on a punishment, most of the core teachers quit. And a number of families decided to stop paying tuition. And so it wasn't that I was kicked out of school, it was that the school vanished all around me. And the end result was I was still in a void. And my father took this as a sign that he won this round. And now we were going to do it his way. And he arranged that I took a test and I interviewed at the Harvard School for Boys, which used to be a military academy and now is just an Episcopalian preparatory school, very, very high end. And for some reason, they allowed me in the middle of seventh grade, and suddenly there in January, I'm rubbing elbows with Johnny Carson's son and the son of Warren Christopher, Secretary of State, and you know, I'm sure there was a Getty or two in there as well. And you know, this was an enormous, well-endowed campus with a beautiful building for each core subject. And suddenly every Friday morning, I had to sit in a chapel service. You know, and I had grown up an agnostic Jew. I didn't even go to temple. And I had no idea what I was supposed to do in this situation with Father Gill going on and on and on. But again, what was most important to me was to figure out, okay, well, what's my role here? You know, where are my people and how do I fit in? And this time, I resorted to what I would describe as desperate acts of comedy. Almost overnight, I put together like this 5-minute routine. I still wince to think about it. And it was like a story about, you know, how my family was being threatened by gangsters. And I did all these terrible impressions. Humphrey Bogart and Jimmy Cagney and Edward G. Robinson. It was just appalling. But this brought me to the attention of the seventh grade drama club. And they were looking for somebody to play Bill Sykes in Oliver. And although I was not threatening at all, I was large. And so they recruited me. And, you know, I was very, very happy. I was happy to participate in the rehearsals and just, you know, be a part of a happening at the school. And, you know, we had a single performance. It went off fine. And then we all retired to the drama lab, the classroom where we had been rehearsing. And to my shock, I saw that it had been decked out for a cast party by all the moms. I mean, and there were Victorian England touches. I mean, there was a woman dressed in period costume. I don't think she was a mom. I think she was hired. She was there with, you know, the pot of gruel, but it wasn't gruel. It was like this incredible seafood bisque. And there was not one, but two cakes. And one, you know, with an illustration of young Oliver, and the other with Fagin, but not just pictures of Oliver and Fagin, but the seventh graders who played Oliver and Fagin. I don't know who spent all that time with the frosting, but, you know, it was incredible. It was overkill. I sat there baffled, thinking, we're just seventh graders, you know? And no one was more baffled and horrified than my mother, who just couldn't believe what was going on. And we sort of, you know, went home in stony silence until I said, so are we rich? And before my father could respond, my mother said, no, and there's more to life than that. And I said, somebody should tell some of those mothers. And my mom didn't say anything. She didn't have to. She'd won that round.